JC Corcoran Podcast.
I play golf. I'm not good at golf. I never got a hole in one, but I did hit a guy. And that's way more satisfying. It's not like seeing a guy you don't know drop 100 yards away. That's right, I hit a guy in one. What's par for hitting a guy? It's one. If you hit a guy in two, you're a f***ing hole. You're supposed to yell four, but I was too busy mumbling. There ain't no way that's gonna hit him. I mumble, you know, I mumble. People say what to me, but I'm sometimes not sure if they want me to repeat myself. Like, I was with this girl, she said, she had a box of crackers. She said, are these crackers good or what? I don't know what she means. Either the crackers are really good, or she didn't hear what I just said. I guess I should have a cracker. If it tastes like shit, I'll repeat myself. I think animal crackers make people think that all animals taste the same. What does a giraffe taste like? A hippopotamus. I had him back to back. I think Pringle's initial intention was to make tennis balls. But on the day that the rubber was supposed to show up, a big truckload of potatoes arrived. And Pringles is a laid-back company. They said, f*** it, cut them up. I like potato chips, too. We'll play tennis later. I got to act in a movie. I had a small scene in a movie, but I got to act with Peter Frampton. He was in the movie. And we had to smoke pot for the scene. But it was fake pot. Do not buy pot on a movie set. But I got to smoke fake pot with Peter Frampton. That's a cool story. It's as cool as smoking real pot with a guy who looks like Peter Frampton. I've done that way more.
No, I'm just getting warmed up.
Happy to see you again.
Don't be nervous. Don't be rocky. You're a teenage guest disc jockey now.
And let me begin by wishing you a beautiful look.
Did that voice inside you say, I've heard it all before? It's like deja vu all over again.
Monday, November 8th, BRR, that stands for Burr. Here with JC at jconline.com. How you doing, kids? It is a Monday morning. It is that time of the year where our lives have been enriched because we have the end of daylight saving time. Said nobody ever. I just can't believe you got 71% of the people in this country who say, get rid of this daylight saving time thing, will you please? The whole thing is based on a fallacy anyhow. People thought that it was something to benefit the farmers. The farmers are like, don't stick us with this. Matter of fact, it actually screws up the animals because they're sitting there hungry going, well, where's our food? And they don't tell time. They only know they're hungry or whatever the case may be, and it throws everything off. And, it was allegedly to solve some energy issues and blah, 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 blah. Get it over with already. Just get rid of it. Somebody do something. No, we're too busy arguing partial birth abortions and critical race theory to actually do anything good for anybody. Oh, by the way, that was Mitch Hedberg doing that comedy thing at the beginning of the podcast here. Mitch Hedberg out of Louisiana. Very, very funny guy. Just killed every time I ever saw him, whether it was on TV or anywhere, comedy specials. Unfortunately, he got into the Bolivian marching powder and then heroin and overdosed, and that was it. I think he died at something like 44. What a shame. He was a funny guy. Well, I start the show today with some very, very bad news. It appears to me, and before I say this, let me just back up a little bit. I think since I was a kid, and I remember people on radio and TV and some politicians occasionally, the Barry Goldwater commercial in 1964. Well, actually, it wasn't for Barry Goldwater. It was against him. It was put out by the Johnson campaign. They talked about nuclear holocaust, that Barry Goldwater was going to get us all killed. And I always remember there was somebody sort of preaching the idea, and preachers, by the way, And, you know, a lot of gloom and doom is good for television ratings and for newspapers and stuff like that. It's big, big, big money and power and influence for preachers. Oh, the preachers have been telling us it's going to be the end of the world, you know, as often as they can get away with it. Well, it's like a lot of things. If you just keep on saying it long enough, eventually it might end up coming true. And I will tell you that I stand here today in great fear that this is the final year. Today begins the final year of our democracy as we have known it. Election day for the midterms, 1 year from today. And I think it has the potential. I say potential because a lot of things can happen in 1 year, but it absolutely has the potential for being one of these things that may look like the late 1960s, where we're going to have fires and protesting and people firing guns in the streets. And you're like, JC, have you lost your mind? No, I think it's one of the most sobering moments I've ever had, as a matter of fact. A lot of the safeguards, a lot of the people who were honest to God public servants who really cared about doing their job and doing it well and making sure that there was integrity in the United States system of government, and especially when it came to probably the most important element in the equation that we know as democracy, and that is one person, one vote. You live in this country, you're an American citizen, you get to go vote. Oh, and by the way, your vote also is supposed to count. Well, you know, a lot of these people are not going to be in those positions. A year from now, they have been replaced. And on the legislative level, the state legislative level, so many people who are sympathetic to the Donald Trump movement, I guess you would say, those people are going to be in control. And trust me, this would be just as bad if Joe Biden were doing it. It's not that I'm choosing one political side over the other. I'm choosing our system of government over what is clearly an attempt to suppress voting and to pass laws, actual laws, in some states where it makes it a lot easier for them to throw out the results of the election and just go with something else that they've chosen. So you can laugh and say, well, you know, JC's having a big overreaction. He's trying to get people to listen to the podcast. Nope. Nope. I really believe this. And when I say I believe it, I believe the potential. As I said, it's a year, especially in this political climate, a year is an eternity. So a lot of things can happen. But what I'm saying, if nothing does happen to get in the way of all of this, 1 year from today, you might remember what I said here on Monday, November 8th, 2021. On Friday night, the company that owns something like 750 radio stations around the country, including six in St. Louis, outfit called iHeartRadio. A lot of people call it I Hate Radio, but iHeartRadio flipped 80 stations across the country to Christmas music. 80 of their stations, with one flip of the switch, started playing Christmas music over the weekend. The Christmas commercials started popping up on television. Soon it will be Christmas Day. Playing in the background of the commercial and me yelling at the TV, no, it won't. It's still 7 weeks away. Soon it will be Christmas Day. I was in Target over the weekend. You go into the Christmas decorating area and the shelves are, I'm going to call them empty, but they're half empty. All that crap you put on the side of your house and on your front lawn for Christmas, it's all sitting on boats off the coast of Los Angeles. I swear on Black Friday, there's going to be women on jet skis going out to the boats. Just give me what you have in that thing right there on the boat. One commercial that did not air over the weekend, anything having to do with Aaron Rodgers. You couldn't watch a football game 2 weeks ago that didn't have a bunch of those State Farm commercials, and State Farm still ran commercials over the weekend. It just wasn't anything with Aaron in it. Over the last couple of days, you've been watching the equivalent of a career suicide. I've been saying this for years, and maybe somebody will eventually listen to me. You know, just because somebody is good athletically or good at anything for that matter, just because you can play a guitar really well, or you can sing really well, or you can hit a ball 465 feet dead center field, or in the case of Aaron, throw a football and be one of the best quarterbacks ever to play the game. I'm not taking that away from him, but we always just sort of assume, and plus he gets great chicks, you know, Danica Patrick and Olivia Munn. Now he's got Shailene Woodley, and everybody's been under the impression that Aaron Rodgers is a good guy. Just because you can do something, you know, on a stage, if you will, and I include a football field or a baseball field, you know, any sort of playing surface, I consider that showbiz, entertainment, whatever it is. It doesn't necessarily make you an interesting person. It does not necessarily make you a nice person. And I love these people who try to reduce this to the idea of, well, JC, you just complained because somebody disagreed with you. Nothing to do with somebody disagreeing with me. It's got something to do with, I don't know, lying in a way that could hurt other people, exposing his teammates, the media, the staff up at Lambeau Field to possible illness and, yes, possible death. It happens. And then he starts blaming everybody else, and he's still lying. The NFL says he did not talk to any league doctors. He's been claiming that. He's been saying, well, I got immunized. And the reporters all sat there and figured, well, he's not going to lie to us just because he used a different term instead of vaccinated. He said immunized. We have no reason to not believe him. And then when he got busted, he's like, well, I talked to the league doctors and I told them what I was going to do because there's protocol in this whole thing. The NFL, all the sports teams, you know, have you been alive the last 2 years while all this stuff is going on? Remember when we didn't have any sports and then we had cardboard people sitting in the stands? This is why we have all of this stuff, so that doesn't happen again. The NFL's like, he didn't talk to anybody that we know of, and we know all of our doctors who are associated with the league, and so Aaron is lying again. There are some damn funny memes that popped up over the weekend, and they're all on my Facebook page at The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. You might want to check them out. Funniest line yesterday from Joe Buck during the Packers-Chiefs game. He said, the quarterback they brought in to replace Aaron Rodgers yesterday. He's making his NFL debut, and it looks like it's his NFL debut. And then the amount, I don't know what was going on in the league yesterday, just upsets all over the place. I can't ever remember this many upsets in one day. Dallas loses. Buffalo loses. Vegas loses. New Orleans loses. The Rams even lost last night to Tennessee, 28-16. Poor Stan on national TV, too. What a shame. Oh, and by the way, on the NFL today, all five of the guys, you know, Howie, Terry, Michael, Jimmy, all those guys, they all took Aaron Rodgers' head off. Matter of fact, I'm sitting here right now trying to remember if anybody has gotten behind Aaron Rodgers on this thing, has defended him, and I can't think of one. Monday Night Football on ESPN, Pittsburgh hosting the Chicago Bears. That should have been a good game. I'm sure it looked at the beginning of the season like something that would have been attractive, and instead that's just a big nothing going on there. The November sweeps have begun. This is something that happens every year for a month during the month of November. They do another one in the spring in May, but the November ones, these are the two periods of time, the 2 months out of the year, May and November, where the ratings for television shows nationally and locally, so all the network stuff, all the local stuff, everything like that, everything is calculated and collated, and then they produce the ratings, the numbers by which the networks and the local television stations set their advertising rates. So the first thing they think of is, well, let's start trying to game the system, and there are ways that they try to do that. Do you ever watch the news at 10 o'clock and they go to commercials? So you figure, okay, I'll go to a different news station, and you go there and they're in commercials too. And then you go to the third station and they're in commercials too. That's not by accident. That is specifically designed that way because of the way the ratings are taken. It's a long story. I would probably make you more confused than anything if I tried to explain it, but suffice to say that it's like that for a reason. So here we go. You think it was noticed by Jimmy Fallon that the ratings are being taken? Michael Che from Saturday Night Live, Ed Sheeran, and Martha Stewart all on one show tonight. Kimmel has Gwyneth Paltrow. Stephen Colbert as journalist Jonathan Carl and Brandi Carlile. James Corden, Tig Notaro. Oh, wow. Apparently, James Corden did not get the memo. She might be the most unfunny person that's working right now. Dr. Michael Eric Dyson, who I like, but when he starts talking, it's like he coughed up a thesaurus. He can lose you if you break concentration for a half a second, he'll lose you. And Seth Meyers as Pete Davidson and my girl, Emily Ratajkowski. Over the weekend, Marvel's Eternals opened to $71 million. That's pretty good. On Weekend Update, and by the way, Kieran Culkin, I have not been paying much attention to him, and I will now because he really hit it out of the park. That was one of the best SNLs in quite a while. All of the sketches were really, really good. And Cecily Strong did a weird Weekend Update thing about abortion that people are wondering if that was actually about her. And that it was weird, sort of gave me the creeps a little bit. In January, Jethro Tull is going to release their first new album in 18 years. The first single is something called Shoshana Sleeping. Birthdays today, Tara Reid. Well, there's somebody who has a lot of miles on her. You know, she was engaged to Carson Daly up until about 20 years ago, and then he finally looked around and said, if we can't figure out a way to roll back her odometer, I think I'm moving on. And he did, and that was the end of that. Parker Posey, who is in all of those great Christopher Guest movies, 53 today. Courtney Thorne Smith, she's still working on anything? She was on According to Jim and Ally McBeal, 54 today. Gordon Ramsay, the chef, 55. Leif Garrett, Ron, 60 today. Ricky Lee Jones, Chuck E's in Love, 67. Great actress, Alfre Woodard. Oh, my goodness, I've seen her in some good stuff. 69. Bonnie Raitt. Just one of the most natural singing and playing talents we have in this country. 72 today. And it was 50 years ago today, 1971. A little thing called Led Zeppelin 4 was released. It had a couple of songs you might recognize, like Black Dog and a little thing called Stairway to Heaven. And exactly what would it have sounded like if the Beatles did that song?
Don't be alone.
A little earlier, I was talking about the Fox NFL pregame show yesterday, prior to the football games. What the hell was this?
Well, you know what? We often use the word heroes, but being here reminds us of exactly what that word means. Tom Rinaldi joins us now from Kansas City, where later today he'll be covering the Packers-Chiefs game. But right now he's here to bring us a story about a couple of heroes and a special friendship that even time couldn't stop. Tom? Even time couldn't stop. Tom? Even time. Even time. Even time. We're having some audio troubles there in Kansas City with Tom. But
yeah, you think? I don't think Tom's in Kansas City. I think Tom's on Pluto. Oh, and one more thing about Saturday Night Live. We had heard that they hired one of the new cast members who did a terrific Donald Trump impersonation. Well, we're a couple of weeks into the new season of Saturday Night Live, and he still hadn't done it. He had done Joe Biden. He had done a couple other impersonations, but it wasn't until the weekend, this past Saturday night, that for the first time, we got a look at this Trump impersonation by the new guy, James Austin Johnson.
Excuse me, Glenn. Excuse me. And when it comes to listening, you know what? Like you just saw, I think Glenn listened, okay? I mean, when you look at it, he's someone who takes advice so well. I mean, you know what? Can I get 60 seconds on the clock, please? Because there's a lot of times where I was giving advice. A lot of times I was giving advice and people weren't listening, and it didn't work out so great for some of those people, okay? I mean, when you look back with Star Wars, I said, you need to do it with swords. The lasers are not enough. You gotta have real swords, George. I remember talking. I said this to George. I said, if you're gonna do Star Wars, okay, you have to have real swords. And look at what they're doing with Dune. Look at what they're doing with Dune. I talked to Denis Villeneuve. I said, look at the success of Dune. Look at Chalamet. Look at all of it, okay? Real swords. You know, frankly, with Dune, you've got Momoa and everyone's doing flips and it's very Game of Thrones. And people were very disappointed, I think, with Game of Thrones, you know, how it ended and everything. But with Dune, I think you've got a lot of possibility with Dune. I see a lot of possibility. 2, 3, 4, 15 movies. And frankly, I see a lot of possibility with Virginia.
Well, it doesn't look like Alec Baldwin is going to be available for a while. So this, how about that? Jeez, does he have him down. But nobody's got all those little idiosyncratic things that Trump does. This guy really, really has it nailed. And if you weren't watching 60 Minutes last night, the state of Missouri featured prominently again for all the wrong reasons. Down in Poplar Bluff, they got some gun nuts down there who have figured out a way to just, you know, petition the governor, Parson, and, you know, like I said at the beginning of the podcast today, this is the beginning of the end. 1 year from today, we're going to know a lot more than we do now about the viability of democracy. I'm tired of talking about this. I want to switch to something else. Over the weekend, we had the birthday of one Mr. Richard Dreyfuss. I thought it was over the weekend. It was a couple of weeks ago. It was October 29th. He was born in 47, so he's 74 years old. A couple of years back, Richard Dreyfuss was in St. Louis. I think it was, yeah, it was something having to do, I think it was Jewish Community Center Book Fair. And, you know, they bring in a lot of famous Jewish people, you know, to speak and do symposiums and just sort of meet with the media and everything like that. In my particular case, they said, you're the only radio station that has indicated any interest in interviewing Richard, so can you just come to his hotel? I was like, sure. See, that's something I've always done. Just because something's happening on the weekend, a lot of people, they pull their headphones out of the jack on Friday, and that's it. They don't even think about the radio station or anything else going on in St. Louis, but I always did. Some of the greatest things that happened in St. Louis are on the weekend, and so if it meant I had to put on a suit and tie and go down and, you know, do a television interview with somebody, like when Jay Leno was in town for the Bob Costas fundraiser for Cardinal Glennon Children's Hospital, you know, I'm working on a Saturday night. My family wasn't particularly crazy about it, but I wasn't going to miss an opportunity like that. And the same thing. So, you know, you go downtown and you go sit with Richard Dreyfuss and he gets pretty cool stuff. So JC Celebrity A-List Interview of the Day.
Big movie star. We're not kidding around here. American Graffiti, Goodbye Girl, for which he won the Academy Award. Close Encounters of the Third Kind, The Competition with Amy Irving. Jaws, Always with John Goodman. Down and Out in Beverly Hills. Moon Over Parador, as we said, Mr. Holland's Opus. Stand By Me, What About Bob? Tin Man, Stakeout, Once Around Krippendorf's Tribe, Whose Life Is It Anyway? And, of course, The American President.
Richard, for a lot of people, the 70s, especially now when we look back at the 70s, were kind of a joke. The year 1977, I just want to kind of go back and look at this because it's actually kind of amazing. The Goodbye Girl comes out, is nominated for several Academy Awards. Close Encounters also comes out. You are nominated along with Woody Allen for Annie Hall, Marcello Mastroianni, Richard Burton for Equus, John Travolta for Saturday Night Fever, and guess who picks up the Oscar for The Goodbye Girl? Richard Dreyfuss, 29 years old at the time. Here was your quote, or one, tell me if you remember this. I always knew I could be a star to the whole audience that couldn't relate to John Wayne or Al Pacino, an educated, urban, progressive, intellectually oriented audience, not too macho, who listened to Paul Simon and Randy Newman. People like me. 29 years old. Best year of your life? Best year of your career?
Hardly the best year of my life, and I suppose it was the best year of my career. I don't know. I never thought about it that way.
You were smiling when I was reading the quote.
Well, because even though I don't remember exactly making the quote, it sounds so much like me. But I never really have said to myself, what's the best year of your career? So, never happened.
But that having been said, 1977, you think of all that happened to you at 29 years old. Where was your head at that time?
It was spinning out of control somewhere the other side of Pluto. Yeah. It was very, very much, it was an overwhelming experience.
I guess it was Premiere Magazine a couple of years ago on the 20th anniversary of the release of Jaws. They did a whole retrospective on the movie and went into the stories of chaos on the set of this movie. Just absolutely chaos. I think you may have had some quotes in there. Spielberg was heavily quoted. Just tell me a little bit about what you remember pertaining to that experience. And did you, at some point during that summer, see your life passing before your eyes?
I didn't. I actually had a great time because I was, in a sense, a very interested and happily entertained observer to the whole thing. This was not going to make or break my life as it did perhaps for Steven or other people involved. So it was a great entertainment. It was a great saga. But it was a film, a huge film, that was started, in a sense, without a script, without a cast, and without a shark. And you can just extrapolate from there.
It's pretty bad if you don't even have the shark, and that's the star of the movie.
Then everything else, it's like falling down a flight of stairs. Bum, 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 bum.
You know, and Steven had started to tell me a story about some inside jokes that were going on the set of that movie, particularly with regard to the scene where you slice open the belly of the shark and a bunch of things come falling out. He started the story, but he didn't finish it, and I think it had something to do with the caterer, and you guys didn't like the food, so you guys loaded up the shark's belly full of all the food that you couldn't stand from the caterer. Does that even ring a bell?
No, this is a non-starter, as they say.
So in other words, when you say you were an observer, you were on the periphery, at least as far as that inside stuff.
Stories, but that's up to Steven. One is Steven's.
Yeah. People here in St. Louis will tell you that I went on a personal crusade 3 years ago to get people to see Mr. Holland's Opus. There was so much going on in this movie. You had the issue of musical education, the son with a hearing impairment, the history lesson I thought was great. One of the great things about the movie. The John Lennon references, the issue of possible infidelity, the relationships among and between the individual members of the cast. For those of us who really connected with that movie on a really emotional level, just lift up the curtain a little bit and tell us a little bit about the making of that movie and how it got made, what it meant to you, and the reaction that you got to that film when it was released.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. You can figure some of the things out about Mr. Holland by looking, in a sense, at it through your peripheral vision. When we make that movie, it's normal when you make a film that you can certainly have a good time, but it's not as if, you know, you go away to make a movie and everyone becomes everyone else's best friend. That's exactly what happened on Mr. Holland. The crew and the cast went through an emotional experience the likes of which I had never had before or since. We all became tight. We all are still friends. We went out together as a group every night. We making that film was a labor of exquisite pleasure. And everyone sooner or later on the film identified with one or more parts of the story. And then when the film came out, it became immediately apparent that the film was being dealt with on two levels. One was that people would enjoy the movie or not, and most people did. But the other is that the impact of the film began to have immediate effect on school budgets all over the country, music departments all over the country, individual teachers' careers all over the country. The film began to snowball, to gain a momentum. I've been involved in other films which became cultural experiences, you know, when Jaws was released or Close Encounters or American Graffiti. But this was the first time that I'd ever done a film where its civic life was as important as it was as a movie.
The American president, here's this actor whose association is with liberal causes his entire life, playing a stuffy, right-wing Republican trying to knock off the liberal president. I think his name was it Bob Rumson?
Yeah, that was my name.
Bob Rumson, president's got a girlfriend. Just devilish that you would be in that role.
This is Robbie wanted me to play another part. I forget which one. And I said, no, this is the part I got to play in this movie. And I'd really like to play him in a bigger situation, you know. No one really has played those people or told those people's stories. I enjoyed it thoroughly. There are certain people in Hollywood who are convinced that beneath my radical left-wing Libby calm exterior beats a conservative fascist.
No.
And they're mistaken.
Richard Dreyfuss, have a great time while you're here in St. Louis. Thanks very much.
Thank you.
Damn, I enjoyed that. I hope you did too. He's a really, really interesting guy. And he was very nice to me too. All right, that's it. The Monday, November 8th, J.C. Corcoran podcast here at jcontheline.com is in the can. We publish free every weekday morning at 7 o'clock. If you missed the podcast, you can grab it from the archives. They're all stuffed in there somewhere, so just click around. Email me at jc@jcontheline.com, as many of you have been doing. Also, follow me on Facebook, The Showgram with J.C. Corcoran. Enjoy your day. Back tomorrow. In the meantime, we've beaten this one to death. Have a good one. See you later. Bye.
The J.C. Corcoran Podcast.